This is a Battle of Britain podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.
Repeat, please.
Poles in the Battle of Britain. Having suffered defeat in Poland and in France, thousands of Polish airmen were welcomed into the ranks of the Royal Air Force in the summer of 1940. During the Battle of Britain, which followed, Polish pilots flew and fought superbly, destroying large numbers of enemy aircraft at a critical stage in the campaign. This Royal Air Force Museum podcast tells the story of the Poles and celebrates their major contribution to the victory over Hitler's Luftwaffe. After the fall of France in June 1940, numbers of airmen from occupied Europe escaped to the United Kingdom to continue the fight against Hitler's Germany. The largest contingent came from Poland, and by August, there were some 8,400 Polish Air Force personnel stationed here. Having been driven from their homeland in 1939, only to be forced to flee again, the Poles now called Britain Wyspa Ostatniej Nadziei, or the Island of Last Hope. Churchill announced that the Polish airmen were to join the Royal Air Force. In doing so, he hoped to show the world that Britain and her allies were committed to continuing and winning the war. He also knew that after suffering heavy losses in the Battle of France, the RAF was short of trained pilots and needed all the help it could get. This was all very well, but few of the Poles spoke any English, and they came from a country with a culture very different from that of their new hosts. The signs were not at first encouraging. The Poles knew next to nothing about the British, and though they admired their courage and their efficiency, they found them reserved and sometimes rather condescending. The British were equally ignorant of the Poles, and there were those that expected the exiles would be hopelessly uncivilized. By way of example, pilot officer Władysław Nowak was invited to a lavish party, complete with orchestra, only to be asked by the hostess if Polish people lived in houses. Amused, he and a friend borrowed two violins and established their cultural credentials by playing a Brahms duet. It should be said that Poland had not enjoyed a good press before the war. Being presented as a prickly, militaristic state, stubbornly opposed to Britain's appeasement diplomacy. Now, however, British propaganda sentimentalised the Poles, portraying them as romantic cavaliers who fought with a burning hatred of the enemy. In fairness to the British, the exiles presented very real political, social, and administrative problems at a time of grave national peril. At all levels, the language barrier made communication between the Poles and their British comrades difficult. It also raised doubts about the wisdom of integrating the newcomers into fighter command's intricate system of command and control. Frustration bred indiscipline, with Polish veterans protesting angrily at being ordered to attend language classes and study King's regulations when they were both ready and willing to fight. At one point, a full-blown firefight broke out at Northolt between Polish airmen and British soldiers, in which, by some miracle, no one was killed. While this and other episodes were smoothed over by the RAF, they seemed to confirm the stereotype of the Poles as difficult and a little wild. By far the greatest cause for concern, however, was the state of the morale of the Poles, most of whom had been twice defeated by the Luftwaffe. Air Chief Marshal Sir Hugh Dowding, who led Fighter Command, was initially reluctant to employ the exiles as he doubted their commitment and feared that their presence in the RAF squadrons might have a damaging effect on the morale of his men. Nevertheless, despite Dowding's reservations, the critical shortage of trained pilots eventually forced him to accept the introduction of Polish personnel into British squadrons. A total of 145 Poles fought in the Battle of Britain, roughly 100 of whom served with the RAF. In addition, two Polish fighter squadrons, 302 and 303, were formed and equipped with Hurricanes. Each was led by an RAF officer and RAF flight commanders with Polish deputies. One such flight commander, the Canadian Flight Lieutenant John Kent, described his disappointment at being posted to 303 Squadron.
All I knew about the Polish Air Force was that it only lasted about 3 days against the Luftwaffe, and I had no reason to suppose that they would shine any more brightly operating from England.
He was to be pleasantly surprised as the Poles set about the task of defending Britain's airspace with courage, skill, and a will to win. The first Polish victory came on the 19th of July, when pilot officer Antoni Ostowicz of 145 Squadron shared in the destruction of a Heinkel 111. Sadly, on the 11th of August, he became the first Pole to be killed in the battle. The first victory by a Polish unit, a Junkers 88, was achieved by 302 Squadron on the 20th of August. And on the 24th, Sergeant Antoni Głowacki of 501 Squadron dispatched three Messerschmitt 109s and two Junkers 88s, becoming an ace in a day. On the 30th of August, 303 Squadron received its baptism of fire. The squadron was on a routine training flight near Northolt when Flying Officer Ludwig Paszkiewicz spotted a formation of enemy aircraft being attacked by Hurricanes. Paszkiewicz alerted his British CO's attention to the fight, but, receiving no reply, he broke formation and shot down an Messerschmitt 110. When they landed, the Pole was reprimanded for his indiscipline and then congratulated for his success. The squadron was declared operational the following day. 303 Squadron served in 11 Group defending London and the South East, and in only 42 days it was credited with no fewer than 126 victories. This made it the most successful fighter command squadron in the Battle of Britain. With 17 confirmed victories, Sergeant Josef František, also of 303, was the most successful pilot. František was a Czechoslovak national who refused to observe air discipline and so was allowed to fly as a guest of the squadron. The Czech fought what was, in effect, a private war against the Germans until his death in a flying accident on the 8th of October, 1940. 302 Squadron flew with 12 Group, which defended the Midlands and East Anglia, and thus saw much less action than its sister squadron to the south. It fought well, however, when operating as part of the famous Duxford Wing over London on the 15th and 18th of September. The Poles loved their high-performance Spitfires and Hurricanes and relished meeting the enemy on equal terms. One pilot described the experience of shooting down a Messerschmitt 109.
I got up with him easily. He grew in my sights. It was time for firing. I did it quite calmly, and I was not even excited, rather puzzled and surprised to see that it was so easy. Quite different from Poland, when you had to scrape and try until you were in a sweat, and then instead of you getting the swine, he got you.
The Polish airmen reinforced the RAF squadrons in the weeks when it appeared that fighter command might well lose the battle. The statistics make interesting reading. In all, the 145 Poles claimed 203 German aircraft for the loss of 29 of their number killed. This represents 7.5 of Fighter Command's total number of victories, or 1.4 enemy aircraft for every Pole engaged. Nearly three-quarters of the exiles served in the front line in 11 Group, and at the climax of the fighting, they comprised over 10% of the group's strength. On the 15th of September, now celebrated as Battle of Britain Day, nearly one in five of the pilots in action was Polish. Air Chief Marshal Dowding admitted he was wrong about the Poles and would write,
"Had it not been for the magnificent material contributed by the Polish squadrons and their unsurpassed gallantry, I hesitate to say that the outcome of the battle would have been the same."
After an uncertain start, the RAF had trusted the Poles, and they had repaid that trust with interest. The delighted British were generous with their praise. The King visited 303 at their base at Northolt and signed the Squadron Chronicle. In Cabinet, it was said that the morale of the Polish pilots is excellent and their bravery much above the average. And young British women competed for the honour of dating a dashing Polish fighter boy. The RAF now rose to the challenge of integrating the exiles into its structure. By an agreement of August 1940, the Polish Air Force was granted independent status, though it remained under RAF command. Further Polish squadrons were formed, and by VE Day, the PAF had a strength of 15 squadrons supported by 14,000 airmen and airwomen. Poles continued to serve in the RAF, and Polish officers led British units. Throughout, the RAF respected the culture and the traditions of its Polish allies, and it recognised their complete equality with British nationals. During the war, 2,408 Polish airmen gave their lives, and a memorial was raised in their honour at Northolt. The memorial bears an apt inscription. Stoczyłem piękną walkę, bieg ukończyłem, wiary nie straciłem. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Tragically, whereas the exiles from Western Europe returned to their homelands as liberators, the Poles watched helplessly as their country was taken over by the communists under the terms of the Yalta Agreement. As those that returned home risked death or imprisonment, most opted to remain in this country or to begin new lives abroad. Having fought so hard and sacrificed so much, the Poles felt they had been betrayed. They would have to wait until 1990, until their country would again take its place among the free nations of the world. The contribution of Polish airmen to victory in the Battle of Britain was disproportionate to their numbers. What made them so good? There are, it seems, three main factors: their training, their experience, and their motivation. Though small and poorly equipped, the pre-war Polish Air Force boasted some of the best trained pilots in the world. Entry was extremely competitive, and candidates underwent a rigorous medical examination, which eliminated all but the best. Training was demanding for the cadets, and conditions austere. It toughened them up, both physically and mentally. Pilots were trained to use their eyes, and in combat, the Poles' extraordinary vision usually made them the first to see the enemy and the first to respond. The marksmanship of PAF fighter pilots was exceptional, and for maximum effect, they were trained to fly very close to the enemy before opening fire. Pilots also practiced flying straight at one another, only braking at the last possible moment, as a way of gauging distance and developing nerve. Though traditionally individualistic, the Poles placed emphasis on team fighting and on the importance of going to the aid of a comrade in danger. With the outbreak of war on the 1st of September 1939, the Polish Air Force's 300 obsolete aircraft were opposed by the German Luftwaffe, equipped with over 1,300 modern fighters and bombers. Despite this, the Polish pilots fought well, and in the brief campaign managed to shoot down 126 enemy machines. Following the Soviet invasion and German victory, most of the Polish airmen escaped to France to continue the war. Once there, their superior training and that most precious commodity, combat experience, stood them in good stead. Though only engaged in the latter part of the Battle of France, Polish pilots destroyed 56 German aircraft. By the time they reached this country, the Polish airmen had undergone a process of natural selection. In other words, those that had experienced Blitzkrieg twice and survived, clearly had a lot going for them. Of course, flying with the RAF was more demanding than anything that they had experienced hitherto, and their poor English impeded their progress. In addition, the novelty of imperial rather than metric measurements and aircraft with retractable undercarriages caused a number of minor accidents. Nevertheless, despite these problems, the word coming out of the training units in July 1940 was that the Poles were very good. The Poles knew they were good, and they were highly critical of the RAF's outmoded battle formations and tactics. Rather than adopting the inflexible parade ground Vic, they had learned to fly in more open formations. Their tactics were also more versatile and more deadly than the RAF's clumsy fighting area attacks. Trained to get in close, the Poles made the most of their battery of rifle-caliber machine guns. All of the Hurricanes on 303 Squadron had their guns harmonised to converge at 200 yards, rather than the standard RAF 400 yards spread, or the 250 yards favoured by the more experienced British pilots. However, while the Poles fought with aggression, they were far from the suicidal cavaliers of legend. They had both the confidence and the ability to take calculated risks, but they were not reckless. Indeed, the two Polish squadrons each only lost 8 pilots in the battle, a figure some 70% lower than that of most RAF units. Polish ground personnel were also highly skilled, and their dedication, efficiency, and capacity for hard work made for high rates of serviceability on the two national squadrons. The ground crew's finest hour came after the fighting of the 15th of September, when 303 Squadron's flying officer Jurkiewicz and his team managed overnight to restore 9 apparently unrepairable Hurricanes for the next day's operations. As for motivation, the contribution of the Polish airmen must be seen against the backdrop of the horrors of the Nazi and Soviet occupations of their country. During the war, Poland lost over 6 million citizens, or 20% of its population. Warsaw alone suffered 700,000 dead, a figure greater than the fatalities of the UK and the USA combined. The Soviets murdered thousands of Poles and imprisoned a further 1.5 million in labour camps in the Soviet Union. The German plan, however, was for Poland to be wiped from the map and its people to act as slaves until their eventual elimination as a race in about 1975. The exiles received enough information to know those at home lived under constant threat of arrest, deportation, and execution. They fought so bravely and so well because they knew that only by defeating the enemy would their country be liberated and those they loved saved. Yet, for all the pain and suffering the Poles experienced, few doubted that God was on their side. On the 27th of September, Ludwik Paszkiewicz was killed. His friend, pilot officer Jan Zumbach, ordinarily a cynic with a sharp sense of humour, wrote,
"He gave his life high up there, somewhere where earthly matters are so distant, the rays of the sun so pure, and God so close."
On the 2nd of September, 1940, 303 Squadron was involved in a combat near Dover, in which one pilot, Sergeant Jan Rogowski, demonstrated the qualities that set the Polish airmen apart. According to the combat report, the squadron was patrolling at 19,000 feet when Sergeant Rogowski saw a formation of 9 Messerschmitt 109s at 22,000 feet, diving on them out of the sun. Instantly assessing the situation, he delivered a head-on attack which broke the German formation. Then, fighting over the channel, Rogowski and Sergeant František each shot down a Messerschmitt. Pilot Officer Hennenberg probably destroyed another, and Pilot Officer Ferich damaged a 4th. In doing so, Ferich's engine was disabled, and he prepared to attempt to glide back across the sea to England. Sergeant Rogowski, immediately took station as his escort. Both were, in turn, covered by other pilots until Ferrich was able to effect a forced landing at Athorn. Typically, it was a Pole that saw the enemy first. The RAF officers leading the squadron are not mentioned in the report. Typically, Rogowski had the courage, the skill, and the confidence to take a calculated risk, which paid off handsomely. Typically, he made the most of his advantage, shooting down a Messerschmitt himself, while the others successfully engaged the enemy. And, typically, he stayed with a stricken comrade until he was sure he was safe. 303's intelligence officer was suitably impressed, writing,
"The Polish pilot showed up very well in this action, working in intelligent combination and pressing our attack right home. Sergeant Rogowski deserves special recommendation for his quick and courageous attack, which probably saved the squadron from what might have been a disastrous surprise."
Jan Rogowski and those like him were not supermen. They were highly trained, highly experienced, and highly motivated professionals on top of their game. The RAF was quick to recognise the calibre of the men serving with them, and it should be congratulated for encouraging the best and the brightest of a courageous, principled and resourceful people to take their place in the defence of Britain and of what remained of European civilisation. Let the last words be those of Johnny Kent, who, you will remember, had been reluctant to serve with the Poles. On leaving 303, he wrote,
"Best wishes and all the luck in the world to the finest squadron in the whole world, and with profound thanks for keeping me alive and teaching me to fight."
He appears to have meant it, for not long after he broke the nose of a British Army officer, unwise enough to refuse to stand for the Polish national anthem.
That was a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum's Battle of Britain series. If you would like to learn more about the history of the Battle of Britain, why not visit the museum's Battle of Britain Hall in London, which houses the world's most comprehensive collection of aircraft that fought in the battle. The hall is open daily from 12 noon to 6 p.m.